We're all in uncharted territory looking for ways to support our communities. At Dell Technologies, we're making sure small businesses have the right tech solutions. Dell Technologies advisors are here for you, from helping small businesses stay connected and productive while working remotely with Windows 10 and Microsoft Teams, to rapidly deploying remote work solutions that limit upfront costs with Dell Financial Services. We're standing by you every step of the way. Call 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL.
Glad you're with us on a Monday morning. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN 2. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. Mike Golic, Trey Wingo here as we have the incredible news over the weekend. Thank you, sporting gods.
You're not kidding.
That the New England Patriots are going to sign Cam Newton to a one-year contract, very heavily incentive-laden.
Yeah, he can make up to $7.5 million.
Yeah, it's just the most Belichick thing ever.
Without question, here's a guy we wondered where he was going to go. New England was one of the teams we thought he could go to and play. I thought it would have been the Chargers all along to go start out there, and nothing because nobody could really bring him in. There's one thing to doing a physical. There's another thing to actually working him out and
Correct.
Seeing how he's recovered from the foot and shoulder injuries. Either way, it's still kind of a gamble because you're not seeing him in live play. And New England does what New England does. All of a sudden, there's Cam Newton on a really low-risk, high-reward possible deal. And onward we go with Bill Belichick.
It's absolutely incredible. So we'll see what happens with him. We'll have much more on that throughout the morning. But we also have to talk about the NBA getting set as, again, the season is supposed to restart in just about a month. They're heading down to start the training camp and bubble scenario. Mm-hmm. Now, I think a couple of teams are already down there.
Yeah, a couple of teams are down there. All the teams have to be down there, I think, right around the first week sometime in July. They've had in all their pre-testing, has had a little over a 5% positive rate.
Correct.
Which is going on because they're going to Florida. MLS is going to Florida. Their rate has been under 3%.
WNBA is going to Florida.
Right, exactly. So, all getting ready to go. We've talked about the great July sports schedule. If it can all happen.
Right.
And we're getting close to it.
So for more on that and what's going on in the state of Florida, as they're seeing, you know, over the last 3 days, 9,000 new cases.
Been a lot.
A massive spike. We're delighted to talk to Jay Williams, our fine NBA and college basketball analyst. Jay, good morning. As always, good to talk to you. Thanks for being with us. We have a lot to get into with you on a variety of topics, but let's start with the idea that the NBA is going to where is now a coronavirus hotbed. I mean, the whole point of the NBA going down to the Orlando bubble was just a month ago on May 25th, the cases were very, very low. Now, because of some parameters that were put in place or not put in place, for lack of a better term, and not being adhered to, we're seeing a spike. How concerned are you that this spike in cases might throw a wrench in the plans of what the NBA has in store for the resumption of the season?
Well, you know, look, guys, first off, good morning to you both. And I would say this, you know, that it's obvious what the NBA is trying to do here. They are assembling a plane after they've already jumped off the cliff. So you recognize that they're doing this in real time. It's going to be a series of ebb and flows. I think it's a great sign that they had less than 5%, rate of COVID victims, players. So Is it going to be challenging going down to a bubble? Yes. But at the same time, guys, one can argue is that this is probably one of the safest places there is for NBA players because of all the processes and of all the restrictions that are going to be on them and some of the employees. And look, you know, a lot of people were saying, this is about the money. They're absolutely right. This is about the money. This is about the economic welfare of a lot of athletes, a lot of future athletes, and a league that has been, you know, extremely imperative in, you know, really creating a lot of wealth among African Americans. And they'll also have a pretty big platform in Orlando, the biggest platform in the world, actually, to showcase and to talk about, you know, systemic racism and social injustice. Is it a foolproof plan? No way. But of all the commissioners that we've seen in sports, Adam Silver always strikes me as extremely judicious and pragmatic, and as the commissioner, I'm rolling with Adam on this one. You have to put your trust and faith in who he is as a person. I think his character is shown over the amount of time he's ran the league.
Staying with the health side of this, the latest player, Wes Chandler from the Nets, has opted not to go play in the bubble. He cited spending time with his grandmother and his three kids and the health concerns there. So along those lines, you just mentioned Adam Silver. When you hear this quote, this is from Adam Silver. Give me your thoughts. Adam Silver said, "We are left with no choice but to live with the virus."
You know, Golic, I'm not going to sit up here and tell you that Adam Silver is absolutely right. I think this is extremely subjective. Obviously, it's taken over our whole country. It's taken over the world. And it's really dependent upon your circumstance, brother. You know, for me personally, my daughter is immune suppressed. My mother just had diverticulitis this year. She had her second kidney transplant. As a player, I would probably not go. And I can respect the fact that Wilson Chandler or other guys would choose not to do so. Avery Bradley as well with the Lakers. But then in the same breath, I can't knock my brother who may choose to go and to play to win a championship. So, you know, I get to a degree what Adam's saying about the league, because the league employs so many people, and you could see the league really, really suffer. You talk about what the league has been able to do for a lot of cities, you know, a lot of owners, and the way they've been able to deploy a lot of their wealth into certain communities and players asking for that. You can't do those types of things or make a difference in your community if you don't have a league. And I'm not saying 1 year of missing a season would make it a league, but it would set the league back monumentally. And even the players would lose over $1 billion worth of salary. So for people who would say that it's not about the money, that's fine when you can say that from the outside looking in. But if you're that individual player who's on a league minimum contract or you're barely making $1 million a year after taxes and other things, this is a chance for you to accumulate wealth for your family's legacy. So it's subjective, man. It's a really tough question.
1,000% correct. I completely agree. Every player is a different position. Thank you for correcting me again. Wilson Chandler from the Nets has informed the team he's opting out again to spend more time with his family, particularly his grandmother who raised him and his three children. The Nets plan to sign forward Justin Anderson.
Golic and Wingo here with you. We're talking to Jay Williams, and there's a lot to get to with the NBA, including the idea that, you know, so many players, including Avery Bradley, who is sitting out because of his son,
right,
has had a hard time recovering from respiratory issues. But he was one of the vocal players out there, Jay, that's like, look, I'm concerned if we go to start playing basketball again, the focus will be just on us playing basketball and not on the things that have proven to be very difficult for so many people of color in this country, basically being treated as equals. What do you make with the idea that the NBA is going to allow players to have certain things on their jerseys that will represent the things they want to stand up for and people to recognize in terms of social injustice?
Trey, I wish I was in a studio. I wish I was with you guys just kind of kicking it the whole show, you know. As it relates to the distraction aspect, I hear that to a degree. Maybe if basketball were the only sport, if other sports didn't come back. But, okay, you're still going to have distractions, right? MLB is starting their season. You have the WNBA, NHL. Other leagues are moving forward, so they would still be a distraction. So now that you actually have the platform, The name on the back of the jersey concept is one that it sounds good on paper. I don't know if it really resonates with me personally because, NBA faces are some of the most well-recognized faces we have in the world. People don't necessarily look at the back of their jerseys for names. So even if you were to have, you know, Rayshon Brooks on the back of your jersey, if you're James Harden or if you're LeBron James, people still know you're LeBron James. So, you know, I think there are little slight adjustments that I think players should ask for. And I know this may sound crazy, but if you see LeBron James running down the court, you're not going to look at the back of his jersey to know that's LeBron James. You know that's LeBron James. So maybe it's something where players have individual, you know, hosts or, you know, people that have to refer to them over the PA by saying, no, I want to be called Rashawn Brooks. I want to be called Amal Marbury. I want to be called these names, and maybe that's the way you bring more attention. There's a lot of ways you can do this. I just don't think slapping somebody's name on the back of a jersey or, you know, whatever the word is actually brings the right kind of attention to the cause that people want to resonate within the sphere of Orlando and the NBA.
That's interesting, Jay. I wonder what else, if the NBA came to you and said, hey, Jay, what do you think we could do in this bubble? You just gave one example there. Are there other things you thought of that would help other than what you've seen them trying to do?
You know, I've been trying to talk to a lot of guys. You know, if it's, you know, answering different questions with names of people that have passed away. If it's, you know, obviously making announcements to work on, you know, putting together groups of money if you're able to raise money. And I don't have all the answers. You know, Chris Paul and the NBAPA have been trying to put together these kind of ideas for a while now. And it's one, honestly, I want to throw out a couple ideas, but I also don't know how it's going to be down there. It's, you know, I think one of the things that people gloss over, and granted, you know, we just made the comment, it's about the money. But, you know, you're asking, you guys both have families. I have a family. I have a daughter who is 20 months. And the money's great, but you have to leave my family for 2.5, 3 months. And I'm going to be in a bubble. And we can sit here and say, oh, it's like AAU basketball. But, you know, guys are going to be around each other a lot of times. There's going to be heightened anxiety. The mental health aspect of this is something I know people just gloss over. But this is uncharted territory for a lot of guys. So I can say all these different ideas, but once you're there, I don't know what that feeling is going to be like. I don't know how people are going to react in different ways. And this is going to be, for any athlete, I mean, you know, I saw Adam Silver's last quote, you know, athletics bring sports, bring people together in our country. And that comment is correct, but it also comes with a lot. It comes with a lot. Now, you can sit there and say, well, the money's worth it. Okay, fine. But you're also subjecting yourself to a lot of mental agony and a lot of questions as we still gather data on all this stuff. It's going to be a really intriguing thing to watch how guys react to this, yet alone, you know, stances that they take socially as well.
Yeah, listen, there's a lot to get into, and Jay, I know you got to run, so we appreciate your time this morning. But again, I wish you were here with us. We could chop it up on a variety of issues.
And listen, next time we talk, Jay, we're going to talk basketball on the court because they're going to be a lot closer to it then. We look forward to some breakdowns there. We appreciate your time this morning, Jay.
Thanks, brother.
I'm with you, Golic. All right, Trey. Thanks, bud.
I want to get to that because just like in baseball, I want to know in, you know, the advantages of a short season. I want to ask players, you know, of former players, current players, advantage pitcher or hitter. You know, in basketball, outside of getting in shape, playing shape again, what's the one part of your game that will come back, will be the hardest to come back the quickest, you know, as a little bit of the season ready to go? There's so many great questions to ask and to talk about as they get ready to go and actually start to play that sport again.
Yep, and they're beginning the process of doing that. Meanwhile, the NFL is getting close to the point of beginning that process of playing again with training camp starting up in just about a month. And the big news on the offseason front was the signing of Cam Newton on Sunday by the New England Patriots. Again, just the most perfectly Patriot move of all time as Bill Belichick waits to get pennies on the dollar. Exactly right. I mean, this is what he does better than anybody. Whether it works out, we'll see. A lot of people think it will, but the idea of signing Cam Newton to a one-year contract that could be worth $7.5 million based on incentives is the absolute most perfect Patriot play. Just give you a quick example besides all the other veterans. Jamie Collins played very well for New England, right? And then he left and got paid.
Right.
And then he got cut. And guess who got him back to play very well?
Yeah.
For the New England Patriots on the dollar. That's what he does better than anything else. So in the grant, we can have the discussion about what he'll do for the Patriots.
Right.
But assuming he's healthy, what does he do for the Patriots in terms of the overall conference of the AFC? Well, here's our Dan Orlovsky.
If Cam Newton's healthy, this offense is going to be built upon a dominant run game, two really good running backs, young tight ends, and so you've got a top two or three defense in the NFL. We all know that Bill Belichick's an incredible play caller, and if Cam Newton's healthy, and he looks like the 2018 version of Cam Newton before he had his shoulder injury, this totally rewrites and changes the storyline for the AFC and the playoffs this season, because this now puts New England right back in the mix to be the AFC East winner division-wise, and certainly one of the 2, 3, 4 best teams in the AFC in totality.
Signing Cam Newton is more proof the Patriots are not going away in the AFC East. Proof is brought to you by Pennzoil. Pennzoil synthetic motor oils are made from natural gas. It gives you unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil based on sequence 4A wear test using SAE 5W30. Now, Dan said there in the 2, 3, 4, 5 area, I'm going to take two out of there.
Yep.
And I'm going to say Kansas City and Baltimore.
By far.
One and two. I think right there, number one and number two.
Yeah. Now, again, you could say, well, the Ravens have lost two home games in the playoffs with Lamar Jackson as a starter. And that's fair.
Fine. If you're asking me to rank the AFC right now, it's Kansas City and it's Baltimore.
I would agree with you.
And then it gets really interesting.
Correct.
You know, does Tennessee take a step back? A lot of people think with Ryan Tannehill, maybe it backs up a little bit. He just got a new deal from them. Maybe the Colts take a step forward. They get Jonathan Taylor and having Mack as well behind the one of the best O-lines in the business. The running game they could have, bringing in Phillip Rivers. Ben Roethlisberger coming back to Pittsburgh. So who is three? And then and then everybody thought Buffalo was going to be the team in the AFC East, so they would be representing the winning the division out of there. Now has that taken a step back? So three becomes, to use your top three, it becomes a real three-ish question here.
It does, because I think most people would agree, because there's always people that are going to see things differently because based on their fandom and how the bias that they go through this, the Chiefs are number one. The Ravens are probably number two, but 3, 4, 5, 6, right? Right now, if you had to rank them, where would you rank the third best contender in the AFC, the fourth, fifth, and sixth? Because to me, it comes down to this question first and foremost. What are you willing to bet more on being a reliable outcome? That if he's healthy, Bill Belichick and Josh McDaniels will get the best out of whatever Cam Newton has left, or the idea that Ryan Tannehill, who again, came off the bench, I believe, after week six last year for the Tennessee Titans, and during the regular season specifically, not so much during the postseason, but during the regular season, was a real igniter of that offense. They became the best red zone offense in the NFL, and by red zone offense, I mean the metric of they had the highest rate of scoring touchdowns on a percentage of drives than anybody else with Derrick Henry as the rusher. Are you more likely to find that magic again in Tennessee, or are you more likely to find that Cam Newton with a limited offseason now, a limited offseason and a late signing in New England is going to be more productive for the Patriots?
We also have to remember their defense took some hits this offseason
as
well.
That's exactly right. The likes of Kyle Van Noy and others have left in New England.
Yep, they have. So you have to put that in the equation. But just like we talk about Alabama in college, though Clemson has had their number as of late, it's tough to overall bet against them. Alabama a lot of times gets the benefit of the doubt, and the Patriots get the benefit of the doubt. So this is just yet another move where Bill Belichick's just kind of smirking in the corner, and everybody else is going, well, here he goes again, pulling this off again. When even my son was saying, oh, yeah, Stidham will be the quarterback. They won't mind being down a little bit this year. And then, oh, look at the draft pick they might get.
In Trevor Lawrence.
And it's like, well.
They were never going to be in the Trevor Lawrence.
They weren't. Even Mike understood that, knew that. They were never going to be that low. That's what Jacksonville's trying to do. So this is a team now that all of a sudden you're going, okay, you know, how quickly can Cam pick it up? I love the thought of who is that third team? Who is that third team that's going to step up in this from the teams that we've mentioned? Or is there another one? At Golic and Wingo, you can certainly tweet us talking about Tennessee. Do they take a step back or stay where they are? Talking about the Colts, do they jump up? We haven't even mentioned the Houston Texans.
Nope.
Is anybody putting them in that mix? Are you adding anybody else in that mix for that third, fourth, fifth team in the AFC?
Yeah, like for me, the Texans are a hard sell because they got rid of their best weapon not named Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL going forward. There's no question about it. But when you trade away a DeAndre Hopkins, arguably the top receiver in the NFL in any list, it's got to be 1, 2, or 3, and you get back a running back who's had a history of injuries, albeit a good player when he wasn't injured, but you know, most NFL running backs last about 5 years in the NFL. That takes the Texans out of the equation for me because they took away the best weapon that Deshaun Watson had.
Their old line has been suspect. Now I know they secured up Tunsil at the left tackle spot, but it has been suspect. So yeah, I'm with you there. Who else could we be missing in the AFC? I mean, that we think can make any kind of a run be in that category.
The Chargers are interesting.
They are interesting.
But I don't know if I put them ahead of any of those teams we just talked about.
Tyrod Taylor, I mean, we know Anthony Lynn likes him. We know he had a couple years playing and starting in Buffalo.
Yeah.
So we'll see what he can do. But, you know, obviously if they go to the rookie and Justin Herbert, then, you know, listen, it's not going anywhere.
Right.
Just like if you have to go to a rookie quarterback. So I will be interested. But one thing we did do.
Yeah, this is great.
At Golic and Wingo, we said, we put out this question. Cam Newton signed with the Patriots. What are your oddly specific predictions for the Pats this year? And somebody did tweet in, Chad said, Cam Newton becomes the second 30-30 guy in the NFL, meaning 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
There's no chance that he'll have
the chance to throw the field.
You're exactly right. I mean, Bill Belichick in a blowout once put in a backup quarterback and threw a pick six and put Brady back in the game. So that's not going to happen. I do like this one. You want to talk about oddly specific, Jay writes in, they will have two ties, both with the same score, 26-26. This has nothing to do with Cam, of course, other than they will throw two touchdowns and have three interceptions in both these games. You know, the guys that are going all these interception things, if you look at Cam's touchdown to interception rate over his career, it ain't that bad.
No, it's
not. I don't understand why we're going down the interception route. Lee also writes in, they'll go 10-6, secure a wild card spot behind the Bills after signing cap following the flops of Stidham, Hoyer, and Cam, and then get blown out of the first round to Deshaun Watson and the Texans. I got it. You nailed it. I'm not sure if I agree with any of it, but is indeed oddly specific.
Matt says Buffalo is still going to win the AFC East title this year. And then in the oh yeah category, Brent says they'll get busted for cheating again. Oh yeah, they just got their punishment given to them for the oh yeah filming scandal of the Cleveland-Cincinnati game where their film crew was they were scouting for that game, but the film crew was shooting a
sidelines.
They were shooting the sideline for what show? I keep forgetting.
Do Your Job.
Do Your Job show, and they were filming the sidelines and seeing what was going on in the sidelines of the next opponent, and they were like, wait a minute. You can't be doing that.
It's B-roll. It's just B-roll.
They got busted $1.1 million fine. Always hurts to lose money.
Correct.
So, and they lose a third-round draft pick in next year's draft. But in signing Cam Newton to that one-year deal, if Cam Newton were to sign as a free agent somewhere else, as a compensatory pick, they would get a third round draft pick.
Bill Belichick playing wizard's chess. Yeah. Everyone else is just trying to get through Candyland, ladies and gentlemen. That's the way it goes. All right, lots more on this throughout the morning and throughout the week, quite frankly, because it's the sporting gift we needed, and we will take it and run with
it. Yes, we will.
But coming up next, a missed opportunity from Major League Baseball on a variety of levels this week, and we'll get to that.
Hello, this is your apartment. I need some favors from you. Your cat keeps rubbing against the kitchen island, and I can't return the favor. Can you give her extra pets for me? After that, could you bundle your renters and car insurance with Geico? We could save money, and it's easy to do online. And one last thing. Could you leave the TV on during the day? I need to catch up on my soaps.
Geico. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Golic and Wingo here with you on a Monday morning, ESPN Radio, ESPN2. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. All phone guests join us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line, including our next guest, our teammate, ESPN News Editor Claire Smith joins us. The winner, by the way, of the 2017 J.G. Taylor Spinks Award, which means she is forever in the Hall of
Fame.
Yes,
she
is. Exhibit. And it's the highest honor you can get to a member of the Baseball Writers Association. Mm-hmm. So for a variety of reasons, we're delighted to be joined by Claire this morning. Claire, good morning. Thanks for being with us. This weekend, Major League Baseball was supposed to be celebrating the Negro League centennial. Like most things, because of the coronavirus outbreak, that did not happen. What are some ways they are willing to be able to celebrate, though, the centennial version of the Negro League today? What things are being done?
Well, what's being done, I can see across social media, is that the players and the folks who run baseball are taking it upon themselves to give shout-outs to the Negro Leagues and the museum that's dedicated to keeping the legacy alive. I've spoken with the president of the museum, Bob Kendrick, and he said that baseball still plans at some point to organize a celebration once the season starts. He says the dates haven't been set. Obviously, baseball has a lot on its plate right now, just getting going again, getting it going safely. But they have not canceled the celebration. They do plan to honor the Negro League at some point in this truncated season.
And Claire, along those lines, how about Jackie Robinson Day, which was missed? Do we see any plans for that being celebrated during this shortened season?
I would doubt it. I haven't seen any plans. I haven't heard of any plans. I think that a lot of things have just gone by the wayside. There won't be an All-Star game, things like that. But they will preserve, thank goodness, the postseason. At some point, I would hope they tip their cap, not only to the Negro Leagues, but specifically to Jackie, as he was the first Negro Leagues player to transition to the majors and, famously became the icon of all America, Black America, all America, because of his bravery in doing so in kind of a treacherous period in our history. So any tip of the cap to the Negro Leagues has to include Jackie. Absolutely.
Claire Smith with us, our ESPN colleague, is a news editor, and the 2017 J.G. Spink Award winner, which is the highest honor you can be given for the Baseball Writers Association. So a lot of fans of baseball growing up may not know as much as you and other people know about the Negro Leagues. What's important for people to know about the quality of play before baseball was integrated?
Well, the quality of play was so wonderful that if you ever have a chance to speak to any of the surviving Negro Leaguers, they will tell you point blank that they were major leaguers. They just happened to be major leaguers in America's other league. And it was another league because baseball on the major league side decided to segregate at the turn of the 20th century. So they well considered themselves major leaguers, all-stars. They could fill Comiskey Park for an all-star game. They played their World Series in major league parks. When they barnstormed, thanks to Satchel Paige and Bob Feller, the major leaguers and the Negro Leaguers barnstormed and played each other. And the Negro Leaguers were happy to say that they came out on top in those contests. So just consider this. There are two remaining major leaguers, two living major leaguers who started their careers in the Negro Leagues. We are losing these gentlemen, unfortunately. But the two remaining stars of the Negro League who became stars in the major leagues are Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. Period. Stop. Yeah, so you look at you need two hands to count the players who were stars in both the major leagues and the Negro Leagues. But the stars of the Negro Leagues, Josh Gibson, Cool Papa Bell, Satchel Paige, their names resonate and they're iconic baseball figures because that was an iconic league. They were just fantastic players. When the game integrated, what they call Negro League baseball came with them, and that was hitting, running, stealing bases, first to third, just a lot of speed, a lot of small ball, bunting, sacrifice bunts, that sort of thing. And that came with them. It came into the National League because the National League integrated more thoroughly and more quickly than the American League. And it became known as National League Baseball, small ball. So that was one of the gifts that the Negro Leaguers brought with them.
Well, that's incredible history. Yeah. Incredible history for the game that I hope more people will try and gather all that information. So, Claire, as we talk about the history of the game, looking at the game where we are today, both from the social issues and from the pandemic that's going on, especially now the health and safety with the pandemic. Let's stay there for a minute. Buster only does not think a 5% chance the league even starts this year, no 0% chance it even gets to a postseason. Where are you on where we are from a health standard and the pandemic on thinking this season will go off this year?
You know, I'm with Buster. I think that, to steal a phrase from Mike Pence, an abundance of caution is necessary because we're talking about people's lives. We're talking about not only the players, the support staff, the coaches and managers. We're talking about their lives, the media that covers. These are treacherous times, and, you know, caution flags have to be going up in all the states that the coronavirus is raging again. When you look at the states, you look at Texas, you think of the two major league teams there. You look at Florida, two major league teams there. California, with its handful of terrific franchises. And the spikes are all around these areas where the game will be asking players to play. So, you know, I'd like to think that everything will be done perfectly. Everyone will emerge on the other side with their health intact and their pride that they were able to come back and have a season and that they will crown a World Series championship. But I think every fan of the game should be braced for the possibility that it will be halted if there is a health reason. And no one should ever question how the players and managers and management arrive at that decision, because this is life and death. This isn't money. This isn't dollar signs. This is human beings putting their lives on the line to play a game to entertain the rest of us. And I hope they do it, and I hope they do it in a healthy way.
Yeah, and the hardest part here is unlike the NBA or the MLS, there's no bubble. They'll be traveling.
Right.
They are traveling right now, and they'll be going through all these things while these spikes are in almost 29 states at this point. Claire, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your insights, and we thank you for joining us this morning.
Trey, Mike, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
Anytime.
Thanks, Claire. What incredible history she talked about there.
Yeah.
That is just amazing.
And Josh Gibson never got a chance to play in the major leagues, but a lot of people will tell you he might have been the best baseball player.
Listen, great chance for those that don't know a whole lot about the Negro Leagues to check out Google a little bit on that.
Absolutely.
And go back and understand the history of the game before it was integrated and where the game has gone from there. And then what she said at the end, to me, again, it's going to come down to every sport wants to start, Trey, and every sport is going to do everything they can to start. But where's the line?
Yeah.
Where do you say, okay, we started, we're going, oh man, positive test here, positive test there. Where do you pull the plug? Because once you start, it's just like the country opening up. People don't want to close it back up again, right?
Right.
So much money was lost.
So do what you got to do.
Right. Well, exactly. I mean, we all know what we should be doing, or at least we all think we know what we should be doing. There seems to be different opinions out there. But the bottom line is that people don't want to close up again because of all the money that is lost. So they're going to do everything they can to stay open. And I think sports are going to try and do the same thing. When again, this is sports, man. I mean, this is the health and well-being of these players. And I mean, all the way down to college players.
Correct.
As well. Forgetting that, are high school players going to play this year? Where is this all going to go? The last thing in the world you need it to make anything worth it is a player ending up in the ICU, you know, with a ventilator.
Correct.
You know, over this. I mean, it would, so that to me, I think they're all going to do everything they can. And I think a lot of them are going to start. But are they going to finish?
Well, that's the whole line. It's not how you start, it's how you finish.
Yeah.
At this point, it's can you start and will you finish?
Yep.
More than anything else. Coming up, why Tom Brady is already the perfect Floridian. We'll get to that next. Golic and Wingo, ESPN Radio, ESPN2.
Did you know Geico's now offering an extra 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies? That's 15% on top of what Geico could already save you. So what are you waiting for? Your baby to let you sleep in?
What? We could sleep in another half hour? Thanks, sweetheart. And you'll change yourself too?
There's never been a better time to switch to Geico. Save an extra 15% when you switch by October 7th. Limitations apply. Visit geico.com for details.
Golic and Wingo with you. We are presented by Progressive Insurance. So we're trying to figure out what is the right way for players to get ready to play in the NFL without undue risk. And the undue risk this offseason is exposure to the thing that for a long time shut down all sports in this country, the coronavirus and the COVID-19 pandemic. So we've seen quarterbacks specifically.
Right.
I'm sure it's happening everywhere.
Let's be clear about that. It's happened in a lot more places. Exactly right.
But we've seen two very visible situations. Tom Brady trying to get with his new team, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and get them going. Russell Wilson also working out with teams in Seattle, sort of in a very public way, trying to get the chemistry and get it going because we haven't had OTAs and mini camps at all this offseason, and we're a month away from starting training camps. Well, DeMora Smith, the head of the Players Association, the NFLPA, the executive director, said, look, guys, don't do this. The NFLPA doctor has come out and said, don't work out with each other. And DeMora Smith tried to reinforce that over the weekend by saying, look, guys, what you're doing is incongruous with the message we're trying to send, which is stay healthy, stay safe so we can get to training camp and start the regular season. And then you have Tom Brady holding these very public workouts and Russell Wilson. I'm sure more people are doing it, but those are the eyes and those are the people that we see.
Well, and I, quite honestly, I see both sides of it. I see what DeMora Smith, again, when you're head of a union, it's the majority that you're trying to protect here.
Correct.
One of the reasons that the last CBA passed, because it benefited more of the majority on this one. And that's what the head of the union has to look out for. And remember the last CBA when players wanted a different type of OTA system. Yeah. They wanted less two-a-days, padded practices and two-a-days. It was all about player safety. And now you're going into a season where there's going to be a whole lot of player safety and COVID testing and such. And D is saying, guys, if you want me to talk to the league and about player safety, and the league is just going to look at me and say, how much do your players really care about safety? Look at all the quarterbacks out there with 8 and 9 other teammates disregarding,
not helping
what you're supposed to be doing when COVID's around. So I understand DeMora's side of that, and I understand the player side of it, quite honestly. I understand player. If I were still a player, now I was at a position at D-line where you're not getting together with everybody
right. And
having workouts. But if I was a quarterback or a receiver, or in this case, the center goes there too, and my quarterback was like, especially if it's a new quarterback, even if it's not, hey, let's get together and work out, I'd be like, hell yeah, let's go. I mean, right in this, I would be doing the exact same thing. So a lot of them are. Jeff Darlington, our ESPN NFL reporter on Best Week Ever, said maybe it wasn't so much the workout, though that was part of it for Brady, but possibly the messaging as well.
I think it feels more like maybe bad messaging on Tom's part as well. Like, I don't think it's probably, if he wants to avoid, and maybe he doesn't care, if he wants to avoid these types of things, maybe don't quote FDR by saying, you know, the only thing we need to fear is fear itself. Like, if he posted that same picture and said, you know, getting a good, safe workout in today with the exact same pictures, the exact same videos, you know, practicing social distancing with a guy going deep, like on a long pass, like, I feel like we wouldn't be having the same conversation.
It's interesting because
he's 100% right.
Well, he is, because if he just said it, what Jeff said there last, we would all say, well, you know, we'd all say, oh, he's just saying that.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
But instead he says, hey, we only got fear itself. So he is basically, Tom didn't care.
No.
Tom has a couple of years left and he is of the mindset, I need to get with my guys. This is what he does every year.
Correct.
A lot of quarterbacks do this every year. So, as I said, I'm not trying to split the middle on this one. I could see it. If I'm running a union, I'm like, guys, you're killing me here when I want to go talk to the league about player safety, when you're just kind of, you know, thumbing your nose at what socially we're supposed to be doing.
And what the union is telling you to do.
Yeah, exactly. So this doesn't bode well when I'm trying to talk to the league. The league says, your own players won't even listen to you, dude.
It's like Tom Cruise from Jerry Maguire when he's talking to Rod Tidwell. Help me, help you.
But again, I get it. If I were one of those players, I would say, okay, where, when and where?
Yeah.
You know, where you want me to show up, I'm there.
And this has always been the problem, as you know, Mike, from your playing days in the NFL and dealing with the union. First of all, the roster size is so ridiculously large. Like, when we go to training camp, it's expected we're going to have 90 players in camp. And you get it down to, what, 53, including the practice squad.
And then
46
sort
on an active roster. And let's not kid ourselves, too. One of the big things the union has in the NFL is the wealth gap. Because, as we alluded to, by the way, I wonder how many of those people that voted no on the CBA are glad they did it now to lock that thing in light of the economic situation that we find ourselves in a country because of the pandemic. But the wealth gap is so large in the NFL. You have 60% roughly, maybe even 65, basically on minimum deals, either minimum veteran deals or minimum rookie deals. And then you have that 30 to 35% that are really getting paid. The wealth gap is such a large part of the discussion in the NFL when it comes to the union, because the players that have the money, they're going to be a lot more comfortable doing the things they want to do, regardless of what the union is saying, as opposed to the guys that are on the back end of that and the smaller end saying, I've got to do whatever necessary just to maintain this job to get as much money as I can for maybe 3 or 4 years in the league.
Yeah, and listen, in other sports, there's a big disparity as well between the haves and the have-nots. As far as the major sports, I believe the NFL is probably the lowest as far as the minimum salary is concerned. Still a good amount, but you do have players making different decisions.
Yes.
On why they want to do things, whether they want to show up to get paid. And that's what's driving a lot of this, in all honesty, is for these sports that are starting up again in the major sports where the guys are making a good buck is, you know what? I want to get paid.
Yeah.
I want to make my money for this year. Plus you get a year again, added, you know, toward free agency, depending on where you are.
Right.
In your career. But that's the big reason here. So I get both sides of this thing. It's a tough situation for DeMoris to go in and talk to the league about player safety when this is happening.
Again, help me help you.
Not happening.
And it is not happening right now. Coming up, how sports has led to a massive change in our country, and all because the power that players understand they now have. That's next. Stay with us.
Geico knows there are many reasons why you ride. From the thrill of the revving engine and pure adrenaline of flying down the highway, to the confidence of knowing that Geico always has your back with 24/7 access to claim service. But Ari Snyder has one reason in particular.
I have extremely large upper arms. They won't even fit into most shirts. Thankfully, biking really embraces vest culture, so I feel accepted.
Geico Motorcycle. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.